Welcome to the Team Building Show for Canadians, the podcast where we build the future, starting today. High-level conversations, real estate strategies, tips and experiences from the top team leaders on real estate in Canada. We don't dream about success. We build it together. Starting now, the Team Building Show for Canadians.
Welcome to the Team Building Show for Canadians, where we explore the best strategies for building successful teams, creating wealth, and implementing efficient business systems.
If you're looking to take your team building and wealth building skills to the next level, then this is the podcast for you. Our mission is to create high-level conversations, give you actionable concepts for you to go and implement in your business.
We love hearing from our listeners, so be sure to follow us and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram and stay up to date on latest episodes and behind-the-scenes content.
Join us on the Team Building Show for Canadians and start building your team, your wealth, and your systems that will take your business to new heights.
Awesome. Welcome, Sandy.
Welcome. You excited?
I'm super excited.
Doing this new venture. We're totally happy to be doing this together and excited to be welcoming in our viewers and listeners that are out there. And I think we're going to come up with something pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited. Obviously, you have a podcast. I grew inspiration to create my own podcast, and now we have a podcast together.
I know. It's exciting. Awesome. What is your podcast?
How do we mention that? Sales Beast Podcast. You guys can follow us. Salesbeast.ca is the website. And you also have a podcast. What is your podcast?
Yeah, I've done a few different over the years, actually. Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast has been the one that stood the test of time, I guess, almost 10 years. So we've been doing podcasting for a long time. And we've had a few others over the years, including this one, which we're kind of revamping now, Team Building Show for Canadians, which I probably, if you're looking or watching this right now, you probably can see that there's 19 of these already produced. And so 20 is something more special. And we're going to keep going with this. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think there was a bit of a two-year hiatus as we were building a lot of businesses. Mm-hmm. And now with everything that we've learned over the past couple of years, it's a great time to restart this podcast and bring more value from all of our failures.
So why don't we get into a bit of our journeys together, together or separately, and we can kind of talk through how we've come to be in these positions, aside from the podcast, obviously. But we've done some interesting things in the business world, real estate business primarily, and I think our listeners and viewers probably want to know a little bit about who we are.
Yeah, so why don't you get started? I'd love to hear your story first.
I knew you were going to throw that back to me. Well, real estate for me started out as an investment, really. And I kind of stumbled into the real estate realtor side of things in 2014. Prior to that, I was focused on the investment side. So Kate, my wife, and I were doing some creative real estate investing for, I guess I'd say, about 3 years prior to that. And we were coming up with ways to buy real estate without any money and having to come up with all these different creative solutions. And the book that really changed my life and got me into that was Rich Dad Poor Dad, which is a book I'd highly recommend to anyone. It's totally changed my mindset. And it's one of those books that I often tell people that they should reread books a lot. And honestly, I've read that book once and it was like, just changed my life completely, instantly. And I have never ever reread it. I was thinking about that lately. But huge book that changed my life for sure, and got me thinking more about entrepreneurial aspects of it, and just a different way of looking at building financial freedom ultimately. And so that got me into real estate. So we were trying to buy these properties, come up with ways to either buy them or flip them. And we did wholesaling real estate, we flipped real estate, we were putting together rent to own type of deals or agreements for sale, and all these different creative ways to invest in real estate. And that was how I got into this business, was by doing that. I was starting to hang around with a lot of different real estate investors, and that led me to a mentor of mine, Mark Loeffler, who introduced me to the realtor side of things. And you know, he kind of said, hey, he was doing some really cool stuff, by the way, too, at the time, which is what got me intrigued by it, because I said, this guy's, you know, buying apartment buildings and all these cool investments, and he happens to be a realtor as well. I said, maybe that's, you know, something I can learn from and someone I can learn from. And so he brought us into the Keller Williams world. And Kate and I both, actually, in the same, you know, matter for a few months, we joined him and his real estate team, and we started not only focusing on investments, but also the realtor side. And somewhere in that same, you know, few months, we also started the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast with Rob Brake, my partner and I. And we started sharing more, you know, knowledge around real estate investing. We started hosting, you know, interviews, started doing interviews, started hosting some other small events and stuff like that. And that got us going. And over the years, we, you know, I worked with Mark for 2 years. My wife, Kate, somewhere in those 2 years, went on and took a role with the leadership side of the brokerage there in Hamilton, Keller Williams Completes. And she was a team leader there for 2 years, helped really kickstart the growth of that brokerage. And that got me kind of intrigued and forced, I guess, in a way, into the leadership side a bit too, was just learning through her. And then we started our own team in 2016. And I'll speed through the last 7 years of that, but we had some ups and downs. We're still going strong with it, so we haven't given up, but there was a lot of failures over that time. And, you know, hiring the wrong people or at the right wrong time or leading them incorrectly, leveraging myself out of things too fast or not too fast or not fast enough, all sorts of different things that we'll get into, I'm sure, over the course of this show. And led us to where we are today. So in 2020, we started going on this journey of opening the brokerage. And that kind of stemmed from our journey with Keller Williams Young Professionals, which I'm sure we'll touch on quite a bit, and something we're both involved in, which got me really more along the side of leadership and not just running the team and doing the sales and doing all that stuff, but the leadership side. And that led to our brokerage opportunity here with Keller Williams Legacies, which took a year or so to open. We opened in 2021, so we've been open for 2 years. And so over that whole time, I spent a lot of time growing our team, helping that grow, and we've sold upwards of 300 units in a given year. And then we're still trying to crack that 300 number, by the way, and get above that. So I think this year might be one of those years or next. But we've been ups and downs with that, and ups and downs with the people we've been in business with, and, you know, just done things incorrectly, and lots of learning opportunities with that. So yeah, over the course of you know, a decade or 12 years, I guess, now in the real estate side, a decade with the realtor side of things, learned a lot about the team building side and the brokerage side, and continually learning and growing, and learning a lot from you nowadays. So you came into that world somewhere in what, 2018, 19?
Yeah, well, like we really started working together in 2018 with KWYP, the Young Professionals community, and then I think officially 2019 I joined the team.
Mm-hmm. And when did you join us? When you came into our world there? Well, first of all, we worked in Keller Williams Young Professionals. Maybe you should just touch on what that was and what roles we were playing there.
Yeah, so I was actually working on a real estate team in the same brokerage as Sandy, and working on building and being on the operational side. And that was an awesome experience and getting me into real estate and really loving the industry altogether. And then one day I got a call from Mr. Dylan Suter inviting me to join something called KWYP, and I had no idea what that was, but I knew that he wanted to launch it in Canada. And
I got a call like that too, actually.
Yeah, I think we both did, like, here, give me your credit card, sign up kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
So I think that was my first introduction into like the leadership side of things, is like really working with people to create something bigger than just you and bigger than just selling real estate. But I was still working on that other team. We had started kind of KWYP in Canada and building that up, and we had great success. I think we grew to 120 members in the first year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we won chapter of the year, right?
Yeah, we won chapter of the year. And
across North America. That
yeah,
was cool.
That was super cool. But overall, like, got to know you guys and just how high level you were thinking and how big you were thinking. And so I approached you, kind of asked you for an opportunity to work together. And at that time, the team was kind of in the beginning stages and you guys were still figuring out a lot of things, and there wasn't really any jobs, like you guys weren't hiring.
Right.
But we sat down and we tried to figure out what would actually make sense, and the thing that you proposed was the inside sales program.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time I like had no idea what sales were, like I was just focused on client care and more like behind the scenes before. And
I think it was our second go around of that department, if I remember correctly. It was, we had a couple people in and out of it, mm-hmm, over the maybe a year prior to that, and saw some value in it and realized it was a good opportunity, but we didn't, at the time for sure, didn't have the right person. People had come in that role and stayed with us, but moved on to a different role, or went in that role for 6 months or less and then kind of ventured off into something else.
Yeah, or got their license, became a realtor on the team. Yeah, yeah, it was kind of like that stepping stone originally. Mm-hmm. And that's how I came in too, because I was getting my license. I was like, yeah, I'll be an ISA for a little bit and then figure out the realtor side. But obviously it didn't really happen that way. Overall, like I got so much value from just being in conversations with all the people on the team and seeing the growth and the systems and just way more high level than I'd ever experienced before. And got the opportunity to lead the ISA division, so that was awesome. And building that and hiring people and learning how to be a leader through that, I definitely experienced tons of failures through that, as we saw, but it created something pretty cool. And
hey, you learned to love the phones?
I learned to love the phones, yes. I feel like I'm pretty confident in terms of like prospecting, and I really credit that to being in the ISA role and just calling for 8 hours a day and booking appointments. And I think that's such a critical skill to have just generally, no matter what kind of business you're in. But
that's one of the things I find a lot of realtors struggle with, is that hump of being on the phone. Because, you know, something I can tell pretty quick when I see newer realtors, and, you know, you give them a bit of a path of what they should be doing day to day, and they are either like hungry on the phones or they're like avoiding the phones. And usually the ones that are, let's get on the phones, let's do it, go, that type of thing, are generally going to at least build their business a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily are the only ones that are going to make it, but they're definitely going to get there a lot faster because they're just going out there and prospecting and going outbound. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. And regardless, however you're generating business, it could be from online, it could be from any other version of it aside from that phone call, that outbound phone call, at some point the conversation leads to a phone call. So you got to be comfortable getting on the phone. I think early on, one of those things you can do really proactively to get comfortable is just to get on the phone yourself, make calls.
Talk to people, get uncomfortable as much as you can. And it was so uncomfortable at the beginning, but, you know, you practice the scripts and the dialogues and eventually get really good and you just keep developing that skill. So yeah, from the ISA role, we had been kind of dabbling in expansion and then helped kind of develop the expansion division and working more on the operational side while still also being a realtor. And then with the Keller Williams Young Professional side, we got lots of cool opportunities there. We were able to put together an event called the Real Estate Growth Summit, and pretty good success, not from just ourselves, like running our first massive event like that, but just overall for growth and development.
Wow, that was a pretty good event overall. I think you're understating it.
Well, yeah, I just mean like when you're in it and you're coordinating an event like that, you don't really see the results. Beyond that, you see all of the results that came about, like the growth of the team, the opportunity to launch a franchise with KW, the Sales Beast podcast stemmed from lots of conversations that happened because of that event. So that was really the spurt of growth for in a lot of aspects of our lives, I believe.
Well, I think what's fun about that event too is it's like you're starting a business from scratch, but in a really quick time frame, and you have this time pressure to host something pretty cool, and nobody knows what the heck it is, right? Because there was no like
existing
previous Real Estate Growth Summit. It was like we had to come up with that whole mission and vision of the event from scratch, and then go out and find the people to show up for the event, which I think we had 650 or so people in attendance at the end of the day. And convince them to not only show up, but pay to show up, fly in from other parts of the country. And then ultimately we raised $113 was the number, $1,000 for charity. So it was pretty awesome, ultimately, which for sure led to some opportunities because someone up leadership, ladder said, hey, these people know how to make stuff happen.
Yeah, and like you said, I have to say, like, we put that event together in less than 6 months. Like, it was insane. I think by the end of it, we were all pulling our hairs out. But again, the rewards and like the harvest that we reaped from that is like way more massive than you could even put like a dollar value on, I think. Mm-hmm. So then like right after that, we got that opportunity to launch the franchise with Keller Williams. And then so we worked our asses off all of 2020 to make that happen in the middle of a pandemic and any other challenges that you could face. But I think one thing that was really great about us is, first of all, we were like, we're not doing this, like we're doing this. Yeah. And then also
we were offered a lot of outs actually during that, I think, because of partly because COVID and all that, you know, disruption that happened with that.
Yeah, and I mean, despite the challenges, I think we face like a fully virtual world. We're fairly technologically friendly, so I think we were able to pivot really well. And then, yeah, like you said, opened our doors in 2021. At the end of 2022, Keller Williams Legacy's top 8% on the Toronto Real Estate Board. And out of the Vaughan area, we're in the top 15 of offices, and that's just in 2 years. So,
we have 140 some odd realtors now. I think it's 100, a little over that as of a few days ago.
Yeah.
141, 142, in that range. That's
so
exciting.
Very exciting. And I think all of the challenges that we faced with the team and the failures that we went through really led us to go into this opportunity, still allowing ourselves to fail, but already having learned from so many mistakes that we knew that we couldn't mess it up this time.
Mm-hmm.
Or not, at least not mess it up as hard.
there's no such thing as perfection in running a business or growing a business or anything like that. There's just going to be issues that you try to get through and make, build the best version of it you can, but you're never going to hit perfection, so there's always failures.
Yeah, and I think that's something that is not talked about often from like a business building perspective, or when I'm coaching agents or hearing agents talk on social media. It's always like, I'm building it perfectly.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the common message, but nobody really shares the behind the scenes. So I think for us to share a lot of our failures, what we did right, what we did wrong, hopefully will be really valuable to our listeners.
Yeah, failures, and that's one of the things on my other podcast, Rob Brake and I talk about all the time is challenges, and we always want people to share what's your biggest challenge, and what's been that one thing that sticks out, and how do you overcome it? And I think that's one of the things we learn from the most, like you said, just failures, and how did you go about overcoming that despite whatever issue there was? I mean, you have a couple options when issues come up, right? You either just push through it and figure it out, or you can go into kind of detraction mode and go sit in the corner and give up, which actually sometimes that is the right thing to do, but rarely does that get you to your next opportunity or next growth thing that you're looking for. So typically you got to persist through and still make it happen. It's not easy.
I think one of my favorite questions through like our hiring process, we use a process called the Lever Series or Career Visioning, and one of my favorite questions is in the thought process, and it's how many times are you willing to fail before you give up?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really telling question when you're asking somebody, because if they don't think it as failure as learning, they might not be the right person in your organization.
What kind of answers do you
have to coach
them?
What kind of answers do I typically hear? It's actually really varying. I'll get like one end of the spectrum where people will say what they think I want to hear.
Right.
Versus
that's why I asked. I knew I thought you'd say that, which is what I hear a lot, is what I think they think I want to hear,
which is like, let's say commonly something along the lines of, oh, like I'll never give up,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it's
I'll never give up is not the really, I mean, there's no right answer necessarily, but
yeah.
I'll never give up is kind of stupid ultimately, because there's obviously a point. You're not going to go to your grave trying to solve the how do I make cold calling work for my real estate business? Like, at some point, you might want to give up on that and maybe transition. It's not necessarily giving up, but it's just trying a different method of getting to that result.
Yeah, and then I think the other answer I hear a lot, too, is like, well, I look at failure as a lesson, and I'm willing to, like, ask people for support or look at previous successful methods. And I think that's a lot more telling. Like, allow yourself to fail, but also seek guidance. Don't just, like, fail and fail and fail on your own. Look for others that have done it. Look for others that are willing to coach you through it and get you on the path towards either succeeding or like giving up and trying something different.
I know there are three things that you look for when you're hiring people. Three main things from a book that you like a lot.
Yes.
And what I think you just made an example of is that people sharing that they aren't perfect and they can find different ways to do it, but they're not just going to go at it forever. The people that are going to, I'm never going to give up. That's coming. There's a lot of ego in that, I guess, is what I'm getting to.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the, I'm going to allow myself to fail here and there, and here's how I'm going to overcome that and build from that. And that's what I hear when you say that example is a lot more humble attitude.
Yeah, and the book that he's referencing is by Patrick Lencioni, The Ideal Team Player.
Mm-hmm.
And the three things that we look for are humble, hungry, and smart. So yeah, I think it's from the humility standpoint, just not letting ego get in your way and like allowing yourself to reach out to others or reach out for support. A lot of people in this industry don't do that.
Yeah.
And then from the hungry perspective is like constantly seeking the next best version of yourself, even if you're failing constantly, like knowing that one day you're gonna succeed at something because you're just constantly in pursuit of that.
So we did talk about this a little beforehand, but we talked very briefly about failures and that we're gonna share maybe a couple of those. Do you want to dive a little deeper into some of our biggest failures?
Yeah, what do you think our biggest failure has been in the past 5 years?
It's hard to come up with the biggest one. There are freaking so many. I think there's so many things. It's hard. I always find it a struggle to look at failures. I find in my mind, I always try to frame them as lessons. And so, honestly, when I go back and dig it through my mind for failures, a lot of them don't stand out because I've reframed them as
You're
much as I could
lessons,
to be like those
education.
Are lessons.
Yeah.
So. I think maybe we can touch on, like, from the brokerage standpoint, what we've failed at times. I think one thing that I've done this in a lot of forms in my business career, actually, is we've tried to take on too many things instead of just focusing on one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. It's really tempting as an entrepreneur to go after the shiny object syndrome. It's also really tempting when you are learning so much, and I love to learn new concepts, new ideas, and that leads to, like, new opportunities. And they're really exciting looking, and you can stare at them in front of, you know, when you're looking at your, what's my one thing I'm supposed to be doing? And then there's this other thing that shows up, and you go, maybe that's an easier path to what I'm trying to accomplish. And I find when I've done that over my career is it's led to either some issues financially because you're putting your financing into different things and too many things at once, mm-hmm. rather than focus on one, and just a lot more, just spreading myself too thin, and not just myself, but spreading maybe our team and people too thin, and lack of focus on one thing and trying to do too many things at once rather than going step by step.
I think that comes to do with clarity, though. Like, if you focus on too many things, they say, like, master of one, not master of all.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are putting all your eggs in many different baskets, it's really hard to pinpoint, like, what is the most important thing, and helping your team and your business really prioritize is really hard. So, like, I think our favorite thing last year was keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
And really just focusing on simplifying as much as possible and just giving the systems or the tools or the different things that we implement time to work and adjusting them. And if they're not working over an extended period of time, then look at changing it up or whatever, but at least giving it time.
Talked about this in a recent version of that is something like, you know, generating leads for agents, and we do a lot of that, and it's, you know, how we're generating them. I think about that. I see a lot of realtors do this. Is online leads is a thing that everyone likes to see as an opportunity to get more business, and then they go into them and they start, you know, paying for the leads and whatever that looks like, and then they'll give up after like 2 months because online leads are so expensive and there's not much of a return there.
Or like the leads are shit or whatever.
Leads are shit. Yeah. What's the movie? The Alec Baldwin quote there.
Glenn Gary Ross.
Yeah. I love that that movie and that scene where he talks about the leads are shit. Leads aren't shit. You're shit. And that is what it is. Your mind is shit, at least around what you're thinking around that topic, because you got to give it some time, first of all, and you got to build that expectation inside yourself that online lead generation. You're hitting people at the start of their journey, typically in the process. So the odds of someone coming in that's going to buy a house with you that month is like, I don't know, it's probably one out of thousands. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, allowing time to take place, having a plan to follow up for the next year plus to get that person into that transactional process. That's what you have to expect, and that means when you're going into that, you're smart to dedicate a year plus worth of time and energy and costs. But what most people do is they go into it for 2 months, they see that it's not working out for them, then they pivot to something totally different. Often it's another form of online lead generation.
Yeah.
And then they go, and they take so those 2 months that they have dedicated, now throw in the trash and go try something brand new. That you're starting from scratch again. So now you've got to wait another 2 months to even get to where you were previous. And you go through that cycle over and over and over again, and you wake up after a year and go, I've tried 6-7 things, none of them worked out. And this business is so hard. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you just didn't give enough time.
Yeah, whereas one thing for a year, now you've perfected that thing. There's so many versions of it, right? There's even online leads. There's dozens of different things.
Open houses, whatever it is, you have to give the time. And actually, we talk about this a lot on Sales Beast. And if you picture like a real estate business like a hockey stick, right? So it starts on a trend like straight, and then eventually it shoots
exponential.
Exponential growth, yeah. So like all of that time that people put into lead generation is that just constant, stagnant, maybe plateau.
Mm.
And every time someone quits, they've started that plateau, but they've just not allowed themselves to actually see the growth. So every time you do that, you're starting the plateau and you're just missing out. Could have been around the corner if you just waited out a couple months, a couple years, and actually gave effort to that strategy.
Mm-hmm. I learned that early on in my real estate career with our podcast, because we started our podcast show in January 2014, the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Show. And in that, we knew this going in, and I actually am pretty thankful that I started that with a partner, because it is quite a bit easier to hold each other accountable than just yourself in this. Because when we were researching that show and we were seeing if the opportunity in doing that in the marketplace was as good as we thought it was, we were looking at Canadian real estate investing shows that had started and stopped, and there wasn't a lot in 2014, but there was probably a dozen that had started in some way and done 5-6 episodes and then just disappeared. And you know what that tells you is they were looking for getting something out of it. First, it tells me two things. They were coming at it from a side of, if I'm not going to get anything from this, I'm going to give up and restart somewhere else. But also, it tells you that they're looking to get something from it, which is a really tough mindset to go into anything with and expect to get results, versus the mindset of, we're going to just pour into our audience and we're going to serve our audience and our community, which is a much different feeling from the people on the other side of that and the audience in that case, which is what I hope we can do here too, is just come at from a, we're here to serve you sort of mindset, versus we're here to give you something, but
we want
to get something back.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people do when they start anything, any business, but any form of lead generation is the same thing. You've got to come at it from a service standpoint. And because we started out like that and we did that research and we saw the people that failed and then gave up, we said, we're going to do this for at least 2 years and we're just going to dedicate ourselves to that. We weren't even realtors at the time, so we really had no reason to get anything out of it. It was just, let's just share information. Let's see where this leads to. We sensed there was some sort of, timing, opportunity in the timing of it all. And then we didn't get anything for like a year, year and a half. We didn't really care because that wasn't our goal. But thinking back, we didn't get any sort of business from it, not directly at least. We definitely got some knowledge, but we didn't get any direct business. And then one day we kind of woke up and said, I was like a year and a half or so in, Rob and I are like, man, we get like dozens of emails a week from this show, people reaching out, asking for guidance or help, or once we were both realtors, they're directly asking for help and they want to use our services. So that was the hockey stick happening.
Yeah.
But it took a while. It took almost 2 years.
Yeah, and actually that was one of the first things that you said when we came to you, Mike and I, to tell you that we were going to launch a podcast. You're like, yeah, just don't expect anything. And I think that was the best thing you could have said, because Mike and I have literally only expected to grow ourselves from it, and that is it. We almost look at it as like free coaching for ourselves, because we're talking to some of the highest level realtors, business owners, and people even outside of the industry, and we're just learning from that, and we hope that like others learn from it too by listening. So yeah, great feedback and great advice from you on that, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good mindset. How long have you been doing the show for? That
3 years.
3 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So I know like the first little bit of it is always the toughest part, because you gotta delay that gratification more and more, and it certainly for, the younger group out there, it's hard to, they haven't grown up having to wait for too long for things, right? So you've gotta check your expectation around that in any business, real estate business or any lead generation version in this business. So that was my biggest failure, and has been a recurring thing, to be honest, over a decade, is doing that. And I often check myself a lot better than I had in the past now, and I'm constantly having to be aware of that, though, because I know it's one of my things that I can tend to do a little bit incorrectly.
Yeah, I was having a conversation the other day. It was actually with a younger person. I'm not going to name names or anything, but they were like ready to give up on real estate. And I was like, you've literally been in the business for like a year. Why are you ready to give up? Like you haven't even seen what you could do. You don't know what you're capable of just yet. And for you to expect results on day one, like it's not gonna happen. So I think even with the people that we bring into the brokerage or onto the team, we've really gotten good at setting that expectation. Like it's not gonna be easy. It's gonna be fucking hard, and don't expect results right away. Like just,
I like that we're swearing on the show, by the way. I wasn't sure if we were going to do a lot of that, but now you've opened it up. So.
I think so. I mean, why not? Like, we're talking about our failures. Might as well be open and sincere here. Yeah, actually, so the one thing that came to mind when we were just chatting too is like, one thing that we did fail really hard at, and mainly I feel like I had to kind of step in and support you on this too, is like the hiring aspect. Mm-hmm. And just making sure that we're surrounding ourselves with the right people. And I'm guilty of it too, because I was still learning a lot of the processes around, you know, bringing the right people into our worlds. Mm-hmm. But can you talk about why finding the right people is really important? I don't know how else to word that question.
It's important in a lot of ways. It's important if you're actually the one being hired and also doing the hiring. So it's both sides of it, because when you're, and that's one of the reasons I joined up, when I mentioned I partnered with Mark Laughlin at the beginning, because I saw him and what he was doing. I said, I want to do that stuff. I want to learn from him and whatever knowledge. I didn't really much care about anything aside from learning what he was doing. And I knew that in seeing what he had accomplished, I could learn from that person, and somehow that would impact my life positively. And so that was what I was seeking out when I was looking to join up with him, which is what I think, you know, people need to have an idea of what they're looking to learn, more so learn than get anything else, but more so, you know, what can I do to help this person so that I can get their attention and have them help me in whatever, wherever I'm trying to go. That's one standpoint on it, is who you are looking to get into business with. But then from the other side, when you're doing the hiring, and you're building up a team of any kind, team on a brokerage or a team on a sales team or in any business, the culture is really important. And so you have to really do a bit of a check of what type of culture you're trying to build. Is it, there's so many variations of that, right? So, you know, your overall mission and vision and going through that whole planning in your mind is a good place to start, because that will help you understand who you want to hire. And you know, are they team players? Are they humble, hungry, smart? You commented on earlier, I think is a great, easy kind of checklist to go through. But you've got to get a mix too, right? So depending on the timing of your hiring and who you're hiring, and for what roles, you can't have, you know, all a bunch of super high driven salespeople in a sales business. That's not really going to work out at all. Okay, you need to have someone managing the details. You know, someone managing the accounting side of things, probably, which is probably more detailed than the, you know, high driving salesperson. There's all those factors to factor in, and every time you go to hire someone, you need to kind of audit your whole group and go, what are we missing here? What type of person fits in with what we currently have? Or do we want to totally revamp this thing and we got to bring in some new energy and some new attitude? So there's lots of factors in that. But I think it starts with understanding what you are looking to build, mm-hmm. which a lot of people, I see that, and we talk about this a lot actually, when realtors go to make that first hire or the first couple hires, they're pretty often looking at realtors and not administration side. And typically, if you're already a relatively productive realtor, you don't necessarily need a salesperson next. Yeah.
I think the mindset is like, oh, I'm doing X amount of deals, I can bring in that person to do more deals and I get a cut of their commission. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, that person's not going to stay in your world if you don't have systems, tools, support, because why would they work with you if they can just go do that on their own?
You know why they think that way? It's because they're thinking about what I'm going to get from that person.
Exactly.
They're not thinking about how I'm going to serve that person. Because if you think about from a standpoint of how I'm going to serve this person that I'm hiring, which is the best way to hire people, is discovering who they are and where they're trying to go, and then thinking about, can I or can our group here help them get to where they want to go? And if you are hiring a salesperson for your sales business and you don't have any sort of operational support, then it's highly, highly unlikely that they are going to be the best person to bring on at that time, because you're not going to be able to serve them in the way that you should be, because that person should be probably joining in some way because they need some admin support themselves and you're not offering any. So the odds of that working out are really, really slim. And I think that's a really big mindset shift actually for most people, is to look at hiring in terms of who you can serve best and not how they can serve you.
Yeah, 100% agree. From like the hiring perspective too, like let's say someone listening is looking to make that first hire, what would be the first step?
I think one thing that they need to do before anything is to get really clear on their, we call it MVVBP, the mission, vision, values, beliefs, and perspectives, and like spend half a day, spend a full day, spend time actually thinking about that. Don't just throw it together, whatever first comes to your mind, but spend a bit of time on that. Understand where your big, you know, where, what is your vision for your company? Where are you going with this thing? Because if you don't have a clear vision for that, you're gonna, first of all, you're gonna end up hiring, you know, talking to the wrong people because you don't know where you're going. So how can you possibly know who you need on board to help you get there? And then also by doing that, you're gonna be able to now help cast that vision to the person so that they can see themselves growing in your world and be excited about it. And so a lot of people skip over that step. They just go straight into the hiring. Even if they do get, you know, on board to hire the administration side versus the salesperson side, they still tend to skip over that mission, vision, values activities in their mind. And it's just really hard to find talented people if you don't have an attractive offering. And usually starting out, finances is not the attractive offering.
Yeah.
You're not typically able to offer them a higher salary than most other opportunities. So instead of that, you've got to be able to offer them a vision that's exciting and appealing, and they can see themselves growing to where they want to grow within that vision. So you've got to get clarity on that. An organizational model is really beneficial too, so that you can sit there in front of someone and talk about this vision, but not only talk about it, you can show it to them in writing, but you can also show them in a diagram of this is where we're going to be in 5 years. And then they can say, okay, well, I see where I'm starting. You know, how do I get to that top level chair? And when you're sitting there with your first hire, you're actually the best likely candidate to get to that top chair because you're in on the ground floor. And so talking through all that with someone can really make for an exciting offer versus sitting there saying, hey, I really need help with my sales business because I'm swamped and I need someone to come in and do all the paperwork and transactional stuff, and I don't know, I just need help. Can you come on board and help me?
I think if that's the mindset when you're bringing someone on board, that's the mindset they're going to have when they're working with you. Like, right. Oh, we're so busy and we're not really building something, we're just maintaining it, right?
Mm-hmm. It's common though, most common.
It's very common. Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. I lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? Okay, so the other thing I would add too when you are looking at hiring is just having a process. So you mentioned having the MVVP and the org model even before you look at hiring. I think what's also really important, and we kind of touched on it, is understanding who that person is. And there's tools out there to make sure that you know who you're looking for. One of them is the missing persons report. Mm-hmm. And I love that because even before you do make that hire, you're at least thinking about what kind of attributes you want them to have, what kind of, like, how they operate, who they are, what kind of values they hold, and making sure that obviously that aligns with your mission. And then from there, also having a hiring process. And I think a lot of people skip through this, or they just Google like how to hire an assistant or best interview questions,
yeah,
and they kind of freeball it versus having a solid structure on how to get into business with talent.
What I've seen a lot of with that is someone, getting to the point of having someone come in to interview. So you've like put out ads and stuff, you've got some people interested, and then they come and interview, and you kind of sit there and you go, okay, this is what I need. Do you think you can help me with this stuff? And then you're kind of like, yeah, I'm in. Okay, well, let's go. Right? And then that's pretty much the interview versus diving a bit deeper on who they are, what their background's been. Are they, you know, is their journey in life and in their career, is this kind of the next logical step in that journey to take on this role, or is the timing way off because they're way too experienced or not quite experienced enough? And because that's kind of where you need to land. It's got to be at least close to that next logical step of their path.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a lot of people skip over that, that's for sure. And I mean, we know the cost of a bad hire is really, really expensive. And so and it's expensive because, you know, it takes 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, depending on the role, to even get relatively good at a role. And so to build someone up to get there costs money, and then an investment of time as well. And then to have to redo that again and restart from scratch is really detrimental if you're continually on that hamster wheel, which is what a lot of newer business owners tend to be on typically. So yeah, I agree, the process is super important. And those tests of understanding who they are, but also who you are as well, because you also want to bring on complementary pieces. And that's something that I think is really worthwhile doing early on, is understanding who you are, so that you can now take that understanding of of who you are and then go and say, okay, I know I'm not the greatest administration person or operational person, so I know that I need operational people around me. If I was starting from scratch again, I would know that I need someone with some good talent in that area, because I know I'm going to drop the ball there.
Yeah, otherwise you just have two people similar, complementary, that are still, there's still a gap or there's still a hole in the business.
Yeah, so there's so much value in that and understanding that. And you know, we're going to talk a lot about this throughout the show, is team building and how to do that. And I think that's one of the biggest things I'm excited to dive deeper on, is just how to go about that process and a little more systematized version of it than just winging it and throwing the pasta at the wall and hoping something sticks.
Yeah, we've winged it a lot in the past, and we know it doesn't work. So learn from our mistakes, please.
Yeah, it's really expensive. I think that's the biggest thing people need to realize. If you get that in your head that it's just freaking expensive to do that, often that will help you realize that maybe you should think about it a little more before diving deep on it, because you don't want to sit there in a year and go, crap, I spent, or I made, as a realtor, let's say, maybe I made 300 grand this year, but I spent 320 because I hired all these people and they all end up leaving after 6 months, and I kept having to go back to that hamster wheel and redo it, and it's expensive. It really is.
Even from not the money standpoint, but the time, the energy, the resources, it all adds up.
Yeah, time for sure. I think it's one of the reasons people hire people, obviously, is to help free up time. In reality, at the start of that process and the first few months of working with someone, it's not really going to be that. It's going to be actually some additional time. If you can expect that and have that happen, that's one thing. To expect someone to come in, especially in a first hire, to come in and just be able to do everything, it's not a very realistic expectation. A great hire can certainly be better at that than a not so great hire, but you kind of expect it's going to be a bit more time. And then as months go on and stuff, you kind of let that person have a little more freedom, and they're going to be able to add more value to you. And eventually that's going to flip, and you're going to end up with a whole bunch of more free time because that person's taken so much off your plate and added value to the business ultimately.
Yeah, I think my favorite way to look at that is you're casting the vision, you're removing all the roadblocks, and then you're getting out of their way.
Mm-hmm. Removing the roadblocks is a good thing to focus on afterwards. Once you've kind of set that whole thing up and you got the vision and you're starting to work together well, that becomes a big part of the job of leading someone. It's just getting things off their plate that you can see. Maybe sometimes they might not even realize it, but you can, because you step back a bit, you can kind of look from a distance, that 30,000 foot view, and you can see there's a roadblock there, or there's a roadblock coming that you can kind of push aside and have them continue going forward. So that's lots of value, I think, so far for episode 1, episode 20, but episode 1 together.
Episode 1 of the revamp, yes.
Yeah, of the revamped and better version, I think, upgraded version of the Team Building Show for Canadians. So should we end there?
Yeah, I think we should wrap it up. And like we said at the beginning of this episode, follow us on social media, like us and review us on all your podcast platforms, and stay tuned for some amazing content that's going to help you grow your business.
And go out and share this episode if you found value in it. We'd love to hear from you about it, but we'd also love for you to share it and get us more listeners, because the more listeners we can attract to the show, the more we can go out there and get great guests, just get a better audience going, so we can build up this community and ultimately create more value for everyone and have higher level conversations that result in growth for everyone involved. So that's what kind of I'm looking forward to, is doing more of that and having some fun in the process.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to the Team Building Show for Canadians. Hope you enjoy it and find valuable information that helps you to start building your future today. We'll be back soon. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, comment, and give a like to the show. Remember, you can listen to it anytime on Spotify, Facebook, and YouTube.